Part 3. Here's how to talk like a VIP. When two tigers prowling through the jungle chance upon each other in a clearing, they look at each other. They freeze. Instinctively, they calculate. If our staring came to hissing, came to scratching, came to clawing, who would win? Which of us has the stronger survival skills? Tigers in the wilderness differ little from the urban upright animals inhabiting the corporate jungle, or the singles jungle, or the social jungle. Humans start the process by looking at each other and talking. In the business world, while smiling and uttering, "How do you do?" "Hello," "Howdy," or "Hi," they are often like tigers, instinctively, instantaneously sizing each other up. They're not calculating the length of each other's claws or the sharpness of their teeth. They are judging each other on a weapon far more powerful to survival, as they have defined it. Humans are judging each other's communication skills. They know communication skills get people to the top. Thus, by observing each other carefully during casual conversing, it becomes almost immediately evident to both which is the bigger cat and which is the smaller cat in the human jungle. It doesn't take long for people to recognize who is an important person. One cliché, one insensitive remark, one over-anxious reaction, and you can be professionally or personally demoted. You can lose a potentially important friendship or business contact. One stupid move, and you can tumble off the corporate or social ladder. The techniques in this section will help assure you that you make all the right moves so this does not happen. The following communication skills give you a leg up to start your ascent to the top of any ladder that you choose. 24. Here's how to find out what they do without even asking. Use the "what do you do, not" technique. To size each other up, the first question little cats flat-pawedly ask each other is, "And what do you do, Then they crouch there, quivering their whiskers and twitching their noses, with an obvious, "I'm going to pronounce silent judgment on you right after you answer," look on their pusses. Technique number 24. What do you do, not? A sure sign that you're a somebody is the conspicuous absence of the question, "What do you do?" You determine this, of course, but not with those four dirty little words that label you as either 1, a ruthless networker, 2, a social climber, 3, a gold-digging husband or wife hunter, or 4, someone who's never strolled along Easy Street. So, how do you find out what someone does for a living? You simply practice the following 8 words. All together now. How do you spend most of your time? How do you spend most of your time is the gracious way to let a cadaver cutter, a tax collector, or a capsized employee off the hook. It's the way to reinforce an accomplished mother's choice of staying home. It's the way to assure a spiritual soul that you see his or her inner beauty. It's also a way to suggest to a swell that you reside on Easy Street, too. 25. Here's how to sound even smarter. Use the personal thesaurus technique. Did you ever hear someone trying to say a word that was just too darn big for their tongue? By the smile on the speaker's face and the gleam in his eye as the word limped off his lips, you knew he was really proud of it. To make matters worse, he probably used the word incorrectly, inappropriately, and maybe even mispronounced it. Ouch! The world perceives people with rich vocabularies to be more creative and more intelligent. People with larger vocabularies get hired quicker, promoted faster, and listen to a whole lot more. So big winners use rich, full words, but they never sound inappropriate. The phrases slide gracefully off their tongues to enrich their conversation. The words fit. With the care that they choose their tie or their blouses, big players in life choose words to match their personalities and their points. The startling good news is that the difference between a respected vocabulary and a mundane one is only about 50 words. You don't need much to sound like a big winner. A mere few dozen wonderful words will give everyone the impression that you have an original and creative mind. Acquiring the super vocabulary is easy. All you need to do is think of a few tired, overworked words that you use every day. Words like smart, or nice, or pretty, or good. Then grab a thesaurus or a book of synonyms off the shelf. Look up that common word, the one that even you are bored hearing yourself utter every day. Examine your long list of alternatives. For example, if you turn to the word smart, you'll find dozens of synonyms. There are colorful, rich words like ingenious, resourceful, adroit, shrewd, and many more. Run down the list and say each one out loud. Which one seems right for you? Choose a few favorites and practice saying them aloud until they become a natural, staple part of your vocabulary. The next time you want to compliment someone on being smart, you'll be purring, "Oh, that was so resourceful of you! My, how adroit! That was ingenious! Or maybe, how astute of you!" Technique number 25, your personal thesaurus. Look up some common words you use every day in the thesaurus. Then, like slipping your feet into a new pair of shoes, slip your tongue into a few new words to see how they fit. If you like them, start making permanent replacements. Remember, only 50 words make the difference between a rich, creative vocabulary and an average, middle-of-the-road one. Substitute a word a day for 2 months, and you will be in the verbally elite. 26. Here's how to be a you-firstie to gain their respect and affection. Use the communication technique. Sex, now that I have your attention, 2-Bit Comics have been using that gag from the days when 2-Bits bought a 4-square meal. However, big winners know that there's a 3-letter word far more potent than sex when you want to get people's attention. That word is you. Y-O-U. Why is you such a powerful word? Because when we were infants, we thought we were the center of the universe. Nothing mattered but me, myself, and I. The rest of the shadowy forms stirring around us, which we later learned were other people, existed solely for what they could do for us. Self-centered little tykes that we were, our tiny brains translated every action, every word into, how does that affect me? Now, adults camouflage their self-centeredness under a mask of civilization and politeness. Yet the human brain still immediately, instinctively, and unfailingly translates everything into terms of, how does that affect me? For example, suppose, gentlemen, you want to ask a colleague, Jill, if she would like to join you for dinner. So you say to her, "There's a really good new Indian restaurant in town. Will you join me there for dinner tonight?" Before answering, Jill is thinking to herself, by good, does he mean the food or the atmosphere or both? Her reverie continues, "Indian cuisine, I'm not sure. He says it's good. However, will I like it?" While thinking, Jill hesitates. You probably take her hesitation personally, and the joy of the exchange diminishes. Suppose, instead, you had said to her, "Jill, you will really love this new Indian restaurant. Will you join me there this evening for dinner?" Phrasing it that way, you've already subliminally answered Jill's questions, and she's much more apt to give you a quick yes. So, big winners, when they wish to control, inspire, be loved by, sell to people, or get them to go to dinner, do the thinking for them. They translate everything into the other person's terms by starting as many sentences as they can with that powerful little 3-letter word, you. Thus I call the technique communication. Technique number 26, communication. Start every appropriate sentence with you. It immediately grabs your listener's attention. It gets a more positive response because it pushes the pride button and saves them from having to translate it into me terms. When you sprinkle you as liberally as salt and pepper throughout your conversation, your listeners will find it an irresistible spice. 27. Here's how to make them feel you don't just smile at anybody. Use the exclusive smile technique. Have you ever seen those low-budget mail-order fashion catalogs that use the same model throughout? Whether she is engulfed in a wedding gown or partially clad in a bikini, her face sports the same plastic smile. Looking at her, you get the feeling that if you rapped on her forehead, a tiny voice would come back saying, "Nobody's in here." Whereas models in more sophisticated magazines have mastered a myriad of different expressions. A flirtatious, "I've got a secret" smile on one page. A quizzical, "I think I'd like to get to know you, but I'm not sure" smile on the next. And a mysterious Mona Lisa smile on the third. You feel there's a brain running the operation somewhere inside of that beautiful head. If your job required you to carry a gun, you would, of course, learn all about the moving parts before firing it. And before taking aim, you would carefully consider whether it would murder, maim, or merely wound your target. Since your smile is one of the biggest communications weapons, learn all about the moving parts and the effect on your target. Set aside 5 minutes. Lock your bedroom or bathroom door so your family doesn't think you've gone off the deep end. Now, stand in front of the mirror and flash a few smiles. Discover the subtle differences in your repertoire. Just as you would alternate, "Hello, how do you do?" and "I'm pleased to meet you" when you're introduced to a group of people, vary your smile. Don't use the same on each. Let each of your smiles reflect the nuances of your sentiment about the recipient. Technique number 27, the exclusive smile. If you flash everybody the same smile, like a Confederate dollar, it loses value. When meeting groups of people, grace each with a distinct smile. Let your smiles grow out of the beauty that big players find in each new face. And if one person or one group is more important than others to you, reserve an especially big, flooding smile just for them. 28. Here's how to use motivational speakers techniques to enhance your conversation. Use the Joe Smith's Jive techniques. They say the pen is mightier than the sword. It is, but the tongue is even mightier than the pen. Our tongues can bring crowds to laughter, to tears, and often to their feet shouting appreciation. Orators have moved nations to war or brought lost souls to God. And what is their equipment? The same eyes, ears, hands, legs, arms, and vocal cords that you and I have. Perhaps a professional athlete has a stronger body, or a professional singer is blessed with a more beautiful singing voice than the one we were doled out. But the professional speaker starts out with the same equipment that we all have. The difference is, these jaw smiths use it all. They use their hands, they use their bodies, and they use specific gestures with heavy impact. They think about the space they're talking in. They employ many different tones of voice. They invoke various expressions. They vary the speed with which they speak. And they make effective use of silence. If stirring words help you make your point, ponder the impact of powerful phrases. They've helped get politicians elected. Remember, "Read my lips, no new taxes," and defendants get acquitted. Remember, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit. If a presidential candidate said, "I promise not to raise taxes," or Johnny Cochran during O.J. Simpson's criminal trial had said, "If the glove doesn't fit, he must be innocent," these bulky sentences would have slipped in and out of the voter's or juror's consciousness. As every politician and trial lawyer knows, neat phrases make powerful weapons. Look through books of similes to enrich your day-to-day conversations. Instead of saying, "happy as a lark," try "happy as a lottery winner," or "happy as a baby with its first ice cream cone." Instead of saying, "bold as an eagle," try "bold as a new marine," or "bold as a bullfrog's belly." Find phrases that have visual impact. Instead of cliches like "sure as death and taxes," try "as certain as beach traffic in July," or "as sure as your shadow will follow you." Your listeners can't see death or taxes, but they sure can see beach traffic in July or their shadow following them down the street. Try also to make your similes relate to the situation. If you're riding in a taxi with someone, saying, "As sure as that taxi meter will rise," has immediate impact. If you're talking with a man walking his dog, saying, "As sure as your dog is thinking about that tree," adds a touch of humor. Technique number 28. Use Jaw Smith's jive. Whether you're standing behind a podium facing thousands or behind the barbecue grill facing your family, you move, amuse, and motivate with the very same skills. Read speakers' books to cull quotations, pull pearls of wisdom, and get gems to tickle their funny bones. Find a few bon mots to let casually slide off your tongue on chosen occasions. If you want to be notable, dream up a crazy quotable. Make 'em rhyme, make 'em clever, or make 'em funny. Above all, make 'em relevant. 29. Here's how to give them the bad news and have them like you all the more. Use the receiver's ball technique. In ancient Egypt, the pharaoh treated the humblest message runner like a prince when he arrived at the palace, if he brought good news. However, if the exhausted runner had the misfortune to bring the pharaoh unhappy news, his head was chopped off. Shades of that spirit pervade today's conversations. Once a friend and I packed up some peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for an outing. As we waltzed happily out the door, picnic basket in hand, a smiling neighbor rocking away on his porch looked up at the sky and said, "Oh boy, bad day for a picnic. The newscast says it's going to rain." Oh, I wanted to rub his face in my peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Not for the gloomy weather report, but for his smile. You see, it's not the news that makes someone angry. It's the unsympathetic attitude with which it's delivered. Everyone must give bad news from time to time, but winning professionals do it with the proper attitude. A doctor advising a patient she needs an operation does it with compassion. A boss informing an employee he didn't get the job takes on a sympathetic demeanor. Grief counselors at airports, after fatal crashes, share the grief-stricken sentiment of the relatives. Big winners know when delivering any bad news, they should share the sentiment of the receiver. Had my neighbor told me of the impending rainstorm with sympathy, I would have appreciated his warning. Big winners, when they bear bad news, deliver bombs with the emotions the bombarded person is sure to have. Technique number 29. It's the receiver's ball. A football player wouldn't last two beats of the time clock if he made blind passes. A pro throws the ball with the receiver always in mind. Likewise, before throwing out any news, keep your receiver in mind. Then deliver the news with a smile, a sigh, or a sob. Not according to how you feel about the news, but how the receiver will take it. 30. Here's how to make people want to thank you. Use the never the naked thank you technique. To wrap up our section on sounding like the big boys and the big girls, here is a simple and gracious little maneuver. It not only signals to people that you're a top communicator, it encourages them to keep doing nice things for you, or complimenting you, or doing business with you, or loving you. It's very short, it's very sweet, it's very simple. You can use it with everyone in your life. And when it becomes instinctive, you will find yourself using it every day. What is it? Very simply, never let the word thank you stand naked and alone. Always make it thank you for something. People use the bare, exposed thank you so often that people don't even hear it anymore. When we buy the morning newspaper, we flash a naked thank you at the vendor when he gives us our nickel's change. Is that the same thank you you want to give a valued customer who has just made a big purchase in your store, or a loved one who has just cooked you a delicious dinner? Whenever the occasion warrants more than an unconscious acknowledgement, dress up your thank you with the reason for it. Thank you for coming. Oh, thank you for being so understanding. Thank you for waiting. Thank you for being such a good customer. Thank you for being so loving. Often, when I disembark an airplane, the captain and first officer are standing by the cockpit door to bid the passengers farewell. Sometimes I say to them, "Thank you for getting us here." Now, admittedly, that's carrying the technique to extremes, but it does have surprising effects. They fall all over themselves with, "Oh, well, thank you for flying with us." Technique number 30. Never the naked thank you. From A to Z, always follow the words thank you with the reason. From thank you for asking to thank you for zipping me up. Never let the words thank you stand alone. Part 4. Here's how to be an insider in any crowd. Has it ever happened to you? Everyone at the party is speaking gobbledygook. They're all discussing faulty audits, code restraints, or the library market. And you have no idea what they're talking about. It's because everybody at the party is an accountant, an architect, or a publisher, and you are not. So you stand there with a pasty smile on your face, not opening your mouth. If you do, you fear the wrong thing will come out. Paranoia sets in. Everybody will snicker at you. You are an outsider. So you suffer in silence. Just as anglers throw out a dragonfly to get the fish to bite, all you have to do is throw out the right questions to get people to open up to you. Dale Carnegie's adage, quote, "Show sincere interest and people will talk," only goes so far. As they say in poker, it takes jacks or better to open, and in conversation, it takes cursory knowledge or better about their field to get them to really open up. You must have knowledgeable curiosity, the kind that makes you sound like you are worth talking to. In this section, we explore techniques that are open sesames to get people gabbing with you like an insider. 31. Here's how to be a modern-day Renaissance man or woman. Use the scramble therapy technique. My unmarried, and wishing she weren't, friend Rita has a bad case of bowler's thumb. Every Wednesday night, she's bowling up a storm with her friends. She is forever discussing her scores, her averages, and her high game. Another single and searching friend, Walter, is into whitewater rafting. He talks endlessly with his paddling friends about which rivers he's run, which outfitters he's gone with, and which class rapids he prefers. Thinking my two single friends might hit it off, I introduced Walter the paddler to Rita the bowler and mentioned their respective passions. "Oh, you're a bowler," said Walter. "Yes," Rita smiled demurely, awaiting more questions about her big bowling turn-on. Walter was silent. Masking her disappointment, Rita said, "Leal tells me you're into whitewater rafting?" Walter smiled proudly, awaiting further friendly interrogation on paddling. She said, "That must be exciting. Isn't it dangerous?" was the best Rita could do. "No, it's not dangerous," Walter patronizingly responded to her typical outsider's question. Then the conversation died. During the deafening silence, I remember thinking, if Rita had run just one river, if Walter had bowled just one game, their lives might be different now. Conversation could have flowed. And who knows what else might have flowered. The scramble therapy technique is your salvation from such disappointing encounters. It will transform you into a modern-day Renaissance man or woman who comfortably can discuss a wide variety of interests. Technique number 31, scramble therapy. Once a month, scramble your life. Do something you'd never dream of doing. Participate in a sport. Go to an exhibition, hear a lecture on something totally out of your experience. You get 80% of the right lingo and insider's questions to ask from just one exposure. 32. Here's how to sound like you know all about their job or hobby. Use the learn a little jobbledygook technique. Even more insidious than hobby talk is job speak or jobbledygook. I still harbor social nightmares of the evening I attended a party thrown by a couple who worked in computer database management. As I walked in the door, I overheard one chap saying to another, Well, when the domain relational calculus is restricted to safe expressions, it's equivalent to the triple rational... That's all I stayed around for. I knew I wasn't going to understand one bit or bite of the conversation the rest of the evening. It made me long for the days when a mouse meant that furry little fellow who loves cheese, and windows were the kind you bought drapes for, and the web was something spiders trapped flies in. I knew that I was going to need some technical support if I was going to be compatible with this crowd. I decided then and there to learn some of the opening questions that database management types ask each other, which I did. Now I can't wait for a second chance at that crowd because I'm armed with questions like, what RAID level are you using? And what warehousing product do you use? Well, obviously I'm exaggerating to make a point. You don't want to get that esoteric because when they answer, you'll be lost again. But less technical insiders' questions definitely are worth learning. Now the good news is beginning gobbledygook is an easy language. There's no need to master buzzwords, only a few opening questions to make you sound like an insider. Then, here's the fun part. When you tell them you're not connected to their field, they'll be all the more impressed. What a knowledgeable person, they say to themselves. Technique number 32. Learn a little gobbledygook. Big winners speak gobbledygook as a second language. What is gobbledygook? It's the language of other professions. Why speak it? It makes you sound like an insider. How do you learn it? Well, you'll find no gobbledygook audio programs in the language section of your bookstore, but the lingo is easy to pick up. Simply ask a friend who speaks the lingo of the crowd you'll be with to teach you a few opening questions. The words are few, and the rewards are manifold. 33. Here's how to secretly learn about their lives. Use the read their rags technique. Let's say your paper carrier has just hurled the newspaper from his bike to your front door. You pour a cup of coffee and get comfortable to catch up on what's happening in the world. Your world, that is. You flip first to the international news, the fashion section, the sports page, the entertainment section, maybe the comics. Whichever section you usually flip to first, tomorrow, don't. Turn to any other section, preferably one you have hardly ever read. Why? Because it will familiarize you with other worlds so that you can soon discuss anything with anybody, no matter how little you have in common. Soon you'll become addicted to the high that establishing rapport with so many people gives you. All it takes is reading different sections of the newspaper. Then when you crave a bigger hit of insider lingo, start reading trade journals. Those are the closed circulation magazines that go to members of various industries. Ask your friends in different jobs to lend you one so you'll have even more fuel for your conversational fire. All industries have one or two. You'll see big glossy rags with names like Automotive News, Restaurant Business, Pool and Spa News, Trucking Industry, and even Hogs Today for people in the pig business. Oh, excuse me. They call themselves swine practitioners. Hey, you never know when to make your next big sale. It will help to speak pig. Any one issue will give you a sample of their lingo and inform you of the hottest issues in that field. When it comes to people's hobbies and interests, browse through magazines on running, working out, bicycling, skiing, swimming, surfing. Several years ago, I got hooked on buying a different one each week. It paid off quickly when a potential consulting client invited me to dinner at her home. She had a beautiful garden, and thanks to having read Flower and Garden magazine, I could throw out a few insider's terms like ornamentals, ground cover, annuals, and perennials. I could even keep up when the discussion turned to the advantages of growing from seeds or growing from bulbs. Because I was so fluent in flower, she invited me to take a longer walk with her to see her private back gardens. As we strolled, I gradually changed the subject from chrysanthemums to the consulting work I could do for her company. Who was leading whom down the garden path that time? Technique number 33. Read their rags. Is your next big client a golfer, a runner, swimmer, surfer, or skier? Are you attending a social function filled with accountants or Zen Buddhists or anything in between? There are untold thousands of monthly magazines serving every imaginable interest. You can dish up more information than you'll ever need, so you'll sound like an insider with anyone just by reading the rags that serve their racket. Part 5. Here's how to sound like you're peas in a pod. If you squint your eyes and look up carefully at a flight of birds, you'll see finches flying with finches, swallows soaring with swallows, and yellow birds winging it with other yellow birds. The avian apartheid escalates. You'll never see a barn swallow with a bank swallow, or even a yellow bird hanging out with a yellow finch. Somebody said it shorter. Birds of a feather flock together. Happily, humans are smarter than birds. We have brains capable of overcoming bias. Really smart human beings work together, play together, and break bread together no matter what their differences. But does that mean their comfort level is high? Well, that depends on the human being. Our purpose here is not to examine the absurdity of apartheid. It is to leave no stone unturned in making sure that people are completely comfortable doing business or pleasure with you. It has been proven beyond a doubt people are most receptive to those they feel have the same values in life. In one study, individuals were first given a personality and beliefs test. They were then paired off with a partner and told to go spend some time together. Before meeting, half the couples were told that they were very similar in beliefs to their partner. The other half were told that they were dissimilar. Neither statement was true. However, when quizzed afterward on how much they liked each other, partners who believed they were similar liked each other a lot more than the couples who thought themselves to be dissimilar. This demonstrates that we have a predisposition toward people that we believe are just like us. We are most comfortable giving our business and friendship to those that we feel share our values and our beliefs in life. Along with making more profound rapport with customers, friends, and associates, using the following techniques develops a deeper understanding and empathy with peoples of all races and backgrounds. They also open doors that might otherwise not be opened for you. 34. Here's how to make them feel that you are of the same class. Use the be a copy class technique. Just like the finch flaps its wings faster than the gliding eagle, people of different backgrounds move differently. For example, Westerners, who are used to wide open plains, stand farther apart from each other. Easterners, systematically sardined into subways and crowded buses, stand closer. Asian Americans make more modest movements. Italian Americans make more massive ones. At tea time, the finishing school set genuflex and gracefully lowers their derrieres onto the sofa. When the ladies reach for a cup, they hold the saucer in one hand and the cup in the other, pinky ever so slightly extended. Folks who never finished any manners school make a fanny dive in the middle of the sofa and clutch the cup with both hands. Is one right? Is the other wrong? No. However, top communicators know that when doing business with a derriere dipping, pinky extender, or a fanny plopping, two-fisted mug grabber, they darn well should do the same. People feel comfortable around people who move just like they do. Technique number 34, be a copy class. Watch people. Look at the way they move. Small movements, big movements, fast, slow, jerky, fluid, old, young, classy, trashy. Pretend the person you are talking to is your dance instructor. Is he a jazzy mover? Is she a balletic mover? Watch his or her body, then imitate the style of movement. That makes your conversation partner subliminally feel real comfy with you. 35. Here's how to make them feel like you're family. Use the echoing technique. Have you ever been gabbing with a new acquaintance, and after a few moments, you've said to yourself, "This person and I think alike. We're on the same wavelength." It's a fabulous feeling, almost like falling in love. Lovers call it chemistry. New friends talk of instant rapport. and business people say, a meeting of minds. Yet it's the same magic, that sudden sense of warmth and closeness, that strange sensation of, wow, we were old friends at once. When we were children, making friends was easier. Most of the kids we met grew up in the same town, so they were on our wavelength. Then the years went by. We grew older. We moved away. Our backgrounds, our experience, our goals, and our lifestyles became diverse. Thus, we fell off each other's wavelengths. Wouldn't it be great to have a magic surfboard to help you hop right back on everybody's wavelength whenever you wanted? Here it is, a linguistic device that gets you riding on high rapport with everyone you meet. If you stand on a mountain cliff and shout hello across the valley, your identical hello thunders back at you. I call a technique echoing because, like the mountain, you echo your conversation partner's precise words. When you want to give someone the subliminal feeling you're just alike, use their words, not yours. Suppose you are selling a car to a young mother who tells you she is concerned about safety because she has a young toddler. When explaining the safety features of the car, use her word. Don't use whatever word you call your kids. Don't even say child protection lock, which was in your sales manual. Tell your prospect, no toddler can open the window because of the driver's seat control device. Even call it a toddler protection lock. When mom hears toddler coming from your lips, she feels you are family because that's how all of her relatives refer to her little tyke. Suppose your prospect had said her kid or infant. Fine. Echo any word she used. Well, almost any word. If she said my brat, you might want to pass on echoing this time. Technique number 35, echoing. Echoing is a simple linguistic technique that packs a powerful wallop. Listen to the speaker's arbitrary choice of nouns, verbs, prepositions, adjectives, and echo them back. Hearing their words coming out of your mouth creates strong subliminal rapport. It makes them feel you share their values, their attitudes, their interests, and their experiences. 36. Here's how to really make things clear to people. Use the potent imaging technique. I recently had to make a presentation to 15 men in a corporate meeting. Okay, I said to myself as I stood up, 15 Martians and one Venusian. No problem. I'd read men are from Mars, women are from Venus. I'd explored neurological differences in men's and women's brains. I knew all about gender-specific body language and signals. Hey, I teach communications differences. I was well prepared to talk to these men, get my point across, and fend any questions. Everything started out fine. I'd conceived my presentation clearly and concisely, developed each theme, and then I presented it flawlessly. I then sat down and confidently invited questions and opened discussion. That's where it fell apart. All I remember is a horrifying barrage of questions couched in football analogies. One man asked, "Do you think we dropped the ball on that one?" "Yeah," another responded, "but we can make a fumble recovery." Those two I understood. However, when it got to pass coverage and intentional grounding, I started to lose it. When one guy raved about a Hail Mary pass being needed to save the deal, I suffered the ultimate humiliation. I had to ask, "What does Hail Mary pass mean?" The guys looked at each other knowingly and then smiled patronizingly as they explained it to me. Now, analogies can be an effective communications tool, especially if you evoke images from the life of the person you are talking to. Men don't use football analogies to obfuscate matters or to confuse women, but to clarify situations for each other. Analogies from the sport bring situations to life for men because generally they watch more football than women do. Moving on to other sports analogies, everyone knows what a speaker means when he or she hears, "We'll never strike out with this solution." Nevertheless, a baseball fan would find it a more compelling image as he would analogies like caught on the fly, hitting the dirt, or throwing a spitball. Now, those analogies might sound far-fetched to you, but they are potent communications tools when they evoke your conversation partner's world. Why not use the most powerful terms possible to get your point across and make the sale? I call the technique potent imaging. Technique number 36, potent imaging. Does your customer have a garden? Talk about sowing the seeds for success. Does your boss own a boat? Tell him about a concept that will hold water or stay afloat. Maybe he's a private pilot. Talk about a concept really taking off. She plays tennis? Tell her the idea really hits the sweet spot. Evoke your listener's interests or lifestyle and weave images around it. To give your points more power and punch, use analogies from your listener's world, not your own. Potent imaging also tells your listeners that you think just like them and it hints that you share their interests. 37. Here's how to make them feel you empathize without just saying, yeah, sure, uh-huh. Use the employee empathizer's technique. While listening to someone, we often vocalize, uh-huh, or purr throaty little sounds to reassure the speaker that we have heard their words. In fact, with some, it's such a habit, the noises escape their throats unconsciously. My friend Phil is a consummate, constant, and incontinent ummer whenever I'm talking. Occasionally, if I'm feeling contentious after he's given one of his agreeable ums in response to something I've said, I challenge him with, okay, Phil, what did I just say? Well, gosh, poor Phil has no idea. Well, umming is better than a blank stare. However, it is not the choice that top communicators would make. Try replacing your ums with full-blown empathizers. Empathizers are simple, short, supportive statements. Unlike uh-huh, they are complete sentences, such as, I can appreciate you decided to do that, or that is really interesting. Empathizers can be one-sentence positive critiques like, yes, that was the honorable thing to do, or it's charming that you felt that way. When you respond with a complete sentence instead of the usual grunts, not only do you come across as more articulate, your listener feels that you really understand. Technique number 37. Employ empathizers. Don't be an unconscious ummer. Vocalize complete sentences to show your understanding. Dust your dialogue with phrases like, I see what you mean. Sprinkle it with sentimental sparklers like, oh, that's a lovely thing to say. Your empathy impresses your listener and encourages him to continue. Of course, you do pay a price. In order to use the right empathizers, you do need to listen. 38. Here's how to make them think we instead of you versus me. Use the premature we technique. By just eavesdropping for a few minutes on any two people chatting, you could tell a lot about their relationship. You could tell if they were new acquaintances or old friends. You could tell whether a man and woman were strangers or a couple. How? A fascinating progression of conversation unfolds as people become closer. Here's how it develops. Two strangers talking together primarily toss clichés back and forth. For instance, when chatting about the universally agreed upon world's dullest subject, the weather, one stranger might say to the other, beautiful sunny weather we've been having, or, oh boy, that was some rain, huh? That's level one, clichés. People who know each other, but are just acquaintances, often discuss facts. You know, Joe, we've had twice as many sunny days this year to date as last, or, yeah, well, we finally decided to put a swimming pool in to beat the heat. That is level two, facts. Now, when people become friends, they often express their feelings to each other, even on subjects as dull as the weather. George, I just love these sunny days. They also ask each other personal questions. How about you, Betty? Are you a sun person? That is level three, feelings and personal questions. Now we progress to the highest level of intimacy. Level four. This level is richer than facts and creates more rapport than feelings. It is we and us statements. Friends discussing the weather might say, if we keep having this good weather, it will be a great summer. Lovers might say, I hope this good weather keeps up for us so we can go swimming on our trip. Now, a technique to achieve the ultimate verbal intimacy grows out of this phenomenon. Simply use the word we prematurely. You can use it to make a client, a prospect, a stranger feel that you are already friends. Or use it to make a potential romantic partner feel that the two of you are already an item. I call it the premature we. In casual conversation, simply cut through levels 1 and 2. Jump straight to 3 and 4. The word we fosters togetherness. It makes the listener feel connected. It gives the subliminal feeling of you and me against the cold, cold world. When you prematurely say we or us, even to strangers, it subconsciously brings them closer. It subliminally hints that you are already friends. At a party, you might say to someone standing behind you at the buffet line, "Hey, this looks great. They really laid out a nice spread for us." Or, "Uh-oh, we're going to get fat if we let ourselves enjoy all of this." Technique number 38, the premature we. Create the sensation of intimacy with someone, even if you've just met them moments before. Scramble the signals in their psyche by skipping conversational levels 1 and 2 and cutting right to levels 3 and 4. Elicit intimate feelings by using the magic words, we, us, and our. 39. Here's how to create a friendly, private joke with them. Use the instant history technique. Lovers whisper phrases in each other's ears that mean nothing to anyone but themselves. Friends crack up over a few words that sound like gobbledygook to anyone overhearing them. And close business associates chuckle about shared experiences. One company I've worked with has seen re-engineering, empowerment, TQM, and team building come and go in one decade. At company parties, the employees never fail to crack up over the time when the whole company, managers to mailroom clerks, scrambled up a 29-foot pole, all in the name of team building. Now, much to the silent amusement of all, the CEO slipped down the pole and broke his big toe. And at the next weekly meeting, the CEO shook his crutch and caustically announced, "No more team exercises." Thus, the death of team building and the birth of a private joke. Out of shared experiences like this, a company culture grows. These employees have a history and a language to go with it. To this day, whenever they want to put an abrupt end to any idea, they say, "Let's shake a crutch at that one," or "Let that one slide down the flagpole." They all smile. Nobody knows what they mean, except fellow employees. Every time my friend Daryl and I meet, we don't say hello. We say, "Quack." Why? We met at a party 5 years ago, and in our first conversation, Daryl told me he grew up on a duck farm. When I told him I'd never seen a duck farm, he performed the best human imitation of a duck I'd ever seen. He flipped his head side to side, looking at me first out of one eye, then the other, all the while flapping his arms and quacking. I got such a laugh out of his performance that it inspired him to do a full flat-footed duck waddle for me. It was contagious. Together we waddled around the room, flapping and quacking. We made absolute fools of ourselves that evening. The next day, my phone rang. I picked up the receiver to hear, not, "Hello, this is Daryl," but simply, "Quack." I'm sure that's what started our friendship. To this day, every time I hear his quack on the phone, it floods me with happy, if a tad embarrassing, memories. It recalls our history, and it renews our friendship, no matter how long it's been since we last quacked at each other. Technique 39, instant history. When you meet a stranger that you'd like to make less of a stranger, search for some special moment that you've shared during your first encounter. Then find a few words that reprieve that laugh, that warm smile, the good feelings that the two of you felt. Now, just like old friends, you have a history together, an instant history. Part 6, the power of praise, the folly of flattery. Kids are experts at getting what they want. Perched on Papa's knee, they might say, "Oh, Daddy, you're so wonderful. I know you'll buy me that new doll." And the next morning with Mom in the supermarket, "Oh, Mommy, I love you. You're the bestest mommy in the world. I know you'll buy me that chocolate munchie.
From the hungry infant's instinctive cooing as Mommy approaches the crib to the car salesman's calculated praise as some prospect walks into the showroom, compliments come naturally to people when they want something from somebody. In fact, compliments are the most widely used and thoroughly endorsed of all getting-what-you-want techniques. Let's say you give somebody a compliment. You smile, waiting to see the warm feelings that engulf the recipient. You may have to wait a long time, because if he or she has a speck of suspicion that your praise is self-serving, it has the opposite effect. If your compliment is insincere or unskilled, it can wreck your chances of ever being trusted by that person again. It can abort a potential relationship before it ever gets off the runway. However, skilled praise is a different story. When done well, it gives the relationship immediate liftoff. It can make a sale, win a new friend, or rejuvenate a marriage on a golden anniversary. What is the difference between praise that lifts and flattery that flattens? Well, many factors enter the equation. They include your sincerity, timing, motivation, and wording. They also involve the recipient's self-image, professional position, experience with compliments, and judgment of your powers of perception. Of course, it entails the relationship between the two of you, how long you've known each other. If you're complimenting someone by email, phone, or snail mail, it even involves subtleties such as whether you've ever seen their face, either in person or a photograph. Mind-boggling, isn't it? Sociologist research shows, 1. A compliment from a new person is more potent than from somebody you already know. 2. Your compliment has more credibility when given to an unattractive person or an attractive person whose face you've never seen. 3. You are taken more seriously if you preface your comments by some self-effacing remark, but only if your listener perceives you as higher on the totem pole. If you're lower, your self-effacing remark reduces your credibility. Ooh, it's complicated, this complimenting stuff. Rather than dizzying ourselves with the surfeit of specific studies, let's just put some terrific techniques in our little bag of tricks. Each of the following meets all the criteria of social scientists' findings. 40. Here's how to compliment someone without sounding like you're brown-nosing. Use the grapevine glory technique. The risk in giving compliments face-to-face is, of course, that the distrustful recipient will assume you are indulging in shameless, obsequious pandering to achieve your own greedy goals. It's a sad reality about compliments. If you lay a big one out of the blue on your boss, your prospect, or your sweetie, the recipient will probably think you're brown-nosing. Your main squeeze will assume you're suffering guilt over something you've done. So, what's the solution? Should you hold back your sincere esteem? No, simply deliver it through the grapevine. Instead of telling someone directly of your admiration, tell someone who is close to the person you wish to compliment. For instance, suppose you want to be in the good graces of Jane Smith. Don't directly compliment Jane. Go to her close associate, Diane Doe, and say, "You know, Jane is a very dynamic woman. She said something absolutely brilliant in the meeting the other day. I bet someday she'll be running this company." Well, I place the odds 10-1 that your comment will get back to Jane via the grapevine in less than 24 hours. Diane will tell her friend, "Oh, you should hear what so-and-so said about you the other day." Technique number 40, grapevine glory. A compliment one hears is never as exciting as the one he overhears. A priceless way to praise is not by telephone, not by telegraph, but by telefriend. This way you escape possible suspicion that you are an apple-polishing, boot-licking, egg-sucking, back-scratching sycophant trying to get brownie points. You also leave recipients with the happy fantasy that you are telling the whole world about their greatness. 41. Here's how to win their hearts by being an undercover complimenter. Use the accidental adulation technique. Next in our agglomeration of joy spreaders is a technique I call accidental adulation. Once, at a small dinner party, the subject turned to space travel. The gentleman seated to my right said, "Oh, Leal, you're much too young to remember this, but when Apollo 11 landed on the moon..." Whew! If my life depended on it, I could not tell you what the chap said next. I simply remember smiling to myself and stretching to get a glimpse of my youthful self in the dining room mirror. Of course I remember July 1969. Like the rest of the world, I was glued to the television watching Neil Armstrong's size 9.5 boot hit the moon. However, I certainly was not thinking of moon travel at that dinner party. I was too busy reveling in the fact that this lovely man didn't think that I was old enough to remember 1969. I assumed his opinion of my youthfulness just slipped out. Therefore, it must be sincere. Sure. Now that I think about it, he probably knew darn well I was old enough to remember the moon landing. I bet he was just using the maneuver I call accidental adulation. But it doesn't matter. My warm memories of him remain. Technique 41. Accidental adulation. Accidental adulation is slipping praise into the secondary part of your point, putting it in verbal parentheses. Become an undercover complimenter. Stealthily sneak praise into the parenthetical part of your sentence. Just don't try to quiz anyone later on your main point. The joyful jolt of your accidental adulation strikes them temporarily deaf to anything that follows. 42. Here's how to make them never forget you. Use the killer compliment technique. Would you like to have a little trick up your sleeve, potent enough to kickstart commerce, ignite a friendship, or even a love affair? I'll give you one, but only if you heed its warning label. You must register your tongue as a lethal weapon once you've mastered the following technique. It is called the killer compliment. It was born one night several years ago after my then-roommate Christine and I had just returned home from a holiday party. As we were taking off our coats, she had a silly smile on her face and a faraway look in her eye. "Christine, are you okay?" I asked. "Oh, yes," she purred. "I'm going to go out with that man." "Man? What man?" "Oh, you know, Leal," she said, chastising me for not knowing, "the one who told me that I had beautiful teeth." "Teeth?" That night I happened to walk by the bathroom door as Christine was getting ready for bed. I saw her grinning at herself in the mirror, tilting her head from side to side and brushing each individual tooth. All the while she kept her eyes glued to the mirror, inspecting each one for the beauty that her new admirer had commented on. I realized the fellow who had given Christine the unusual compliment had made her day, and had made a killer impression on her. Thus, the killer compliment came into being. What is the killer compliment? It is commenting on some very personal and specific quality you spot in someone. A killer compliment is not, "Gee, I like your tie," or "You're a very nice person." The first is not personal enough, and the second is not specific enough. A killer compliment is more like, "What exquisite eyes you have," very specific, or "You have a wonderful air of honesty about you," very personal. Technique number 42, the killer compliment. Whenever you are talking with a stranger that you'd like to make part of your professional or personal future, search for one attractive, specific, and unique quality that he or she has. At the end of the conversation, look them right in the eye, say their name, and proceed to curl their toes with the killer compliment. However, just like a cannon, if you don't use the killer compliment correctly, it can backfire. Here is the user's manual that comes with the mighty missile. Rule number 1. Deliver your killer compliment to the recipient in private. If you are standing with a group of 4 or 5 people and you praise one woman for being fit, every other woman feels like a barrel of lard. If you tell one man he has wonderful carriage, every other man feels like a hunchback. You also make the blushing recipient uncomfortable. Rule number 2. Make your killer compliment credible. For example, I'm tone deaf. If I'm forced to sing even a simple song like Happy Birthday, I sound like a sick pig. If anyone in earshot were dishonest enough to tell me they liked my voice, I'd know it was hogwash. Rule number 3. Confer only one killer compliment per half year on each recipient. Otherwise, you come across as insincere, groveling, obsequious, pandering, and a thoroughly manipulative person. Not cool. 43. Here's how to make them smile with itty-bitty boosters. Use the little strokes technique. In contrast to the big guns of the killer compliment, here is a little pea shooter you can pop off at any time, anywhere, to anyone. I call it little strokes. Little strokes are short, quick kudos that you drop into your casual conversation. Make liberal use of little strokes with your colleagues in the office. Examples: nice job, John. Well done, Kyoto. Hey, not bad, Billy. I have one friend who uses a lovely little stroke if I do something he likes. He says, not too shabby, Leo. You can also use little strokes on the everyday achievements of your loved ones. If your spouse has just cooked a great meal, wow, you're the best chef in town. Or just before going out together, gee, honey, you look great. Or after a long drive, oh, you did it. It must have been tiring. And with your kids, hey, gang, great job cleaning up your room. Technique number 43, little strokes. Don't make your colleagues, your friends, your loved ones look at you and silently say, well, haven't I done pretty good today? Let them know how much you appreciate them by caressing them with verbal little strokes, like, nice job, well done, cool, you're the greatest.